Next today, how to fill those long January nights with some entertaining choices to watch on the small screen. Brian Redden is on the line and Aoife Barry, assistant news editor with the journal.ie, is here, and they come bearing gifts to ease the January blues. Good morning to you both. Thanks for joining us.
Morning.
So let's start, Brian, with this, I'm going to say, controversial comedy, Ricky Gervais and Afterlife. It's the last season, the third and last season.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Well, it's interesting. You know, I thought the first and second seasons of this were absolutely fantastic. So for people who haven't seen it, Ricky Gervais plays this character called Tony, and his wife has passed away from cancer, and he has become very, very bitter about life. And he has decided that he's going to go through life just doing whatever he wants and saying whatever he wants with no social filter whatsoever. So he becomes a kind of an awful human being. And in the course of the first two seasons, he starts to slowly discover that life might, in fact, be worth living. There might be some niceties in life if you be nice to people. So he starts to change very slowly. So you'd wonder why you'd need a third season, because not much happens in the first two seasons. And in this season, Gervais himself has been tweeting about it. Everyone's been talking about it. They've been really building it up, Netflix, because the first two seasons were the most watched British comedy of all time.
And comedy,
isn't it? Yeah. It is extraordinary, yeah. And comedy is a very broad term for it, because it's not overly funny. There aren't very, very good comic moments in it. And in this third season, I binge-watched the whole thing. And I have to say, it started off really well. I really enjoyed it. The first two episodes I thought were great. The last episode was great. In between, I thought it kind of lost a bit. I thought it dragged a wee bit. But there's only six episodes in it, and they're very short. They're about 25 minutes long each. So it's like watching, you could sit and watch the whole thing like watching one big movie. But, there are bits in it I felt that he was repeating himself. It was like, this season is like a greatest hits of the first two seasons. It's kind of the same thing over and over again, and people tend to talk in it like they've just snapped open a fortune cookie and read what's inside. So, you know, his ideas about life and why we all have to keep going and how we all have to love each other and give each other big warm hugs, that's nice, and we all need to hear that right now. But it comes across as a little mawkish in places. That said, there are some really, really funny moments in it, and one gag in it in particular that I thought that had me on the floor laughing. So I think it's worth watching, although I don't think it's as good as the first two seasons.
Okay.
Definitely not as good.
I watched the first season of this, of Afterlife, and then I kind of forgot about it. I wasn't mad about it and I moved on. You haven't seen it either.
No, I haven't. I'm not a massive Ricky Gervais fan, I have to say, so I wouldn't be running to go see it. But if you're a big fan of his, then you'll be dying to see it. Definitely see what he does with this new season.
Might go back to it on a kind of a cold
Wednesday
night.
Exactly.
Euphoria.
But you know what you could do? Yeah. Watch the first episode and then watch the last episode and you won't miss anything in between.
Fair enough. Good advice.
Might do that, though. Euphoria,
Ethan, is the one that you have picked. This is on Now TV.
Yeah, this is a really interesting series. It's an American series. This is the second series of it. And we've been waiting about 3 years since the first one came out. Now, it stars teenagers, but it really isn't a kind of an easy watch. So it's not necessarily something you'd be aiming at young teens. It's not for the faint-hearted, shall we say. Stars Zendaya, who was a Disney, a princess almost, starred in a lot of Disney films and things. She stars as Rue, who's a teenager who's trying to make her way through kind of the last years for teenagehood. She's about 17. She's grappling with a drug addiction, a very serious drug addiction. You follow her and her friends as they live their lives in the last years of school, and they're all dealing with really serious things. So you've got a lot of topics. You know, you've got sexuality, you've got friendships, you've got love, you've got texting people, you've got being on the internet and everything that brings with that. You know, you've got trauma. But you also have a really flashy, gorgeous looking series. The cinematography is stunning. The first episode of the second series is like a Martin Scorsese film. It's got the gangs, it's got the guns, it's got the music, it's got everything that you expect from something like that. So you have really kind of like high concept TV show, but it's getting such great reviews and also a lot of love from people because the characters are very complicated, the story is very dark, but there's a lot to them. They're very multi-layered. You really get a sense of who they are, and you're getting even more of a sense of what's driving them into the issues that they're dealing with in the second season. And it's based on an Israeli series, but it's obviously very different in terms of I suppose theme, because it's about American teenagers,
but not very cheery.
No, I mean, I think if you really want something really intense and something that looks really beautiful and that's really stylized, you'll really, really love it. But it's not a light watch, shall we say.
Ozark is lighter, I would imagine, Brian, isn't it? Season 4 out now.
No, absolutely not.
I thought it was. I thought there was a bit of crack in Ozark, no?
No, Ozark's the darkest thing you're ever going to see.
No, I think I watched one episode in season one and I thought, is this supposed to be funny?
Yeah.
And then didn't go back to it. But I got that wrong, right?
Yeah, Ozark is the opposite of crack. It's dark, dark, dark. It is brilliant. It is really brilliant. So Jason Bateman plays a character called Marty Bird. And this is the fourth season of it coming up on Netflix this Friday. So over the first three seasons, he is a money launderer for the cartel, for the Mexican cartel. He's based in Chicago. And he does a runner with his family to the Ozarks. The Ozarks are this kind of wooded lake district in Missouri. So it's kind of like hillbilly, hick country. He thinks he's going to be safe there. But the Mexican cartel find him and he has to start money laundering again, and really things get very dark very quickly there, because all of these local people prove to be, you know, as sinister and as capable of evil and horrible deeds as the Chicago mafia. And he's trying to keep his family together, he's trying to get out of the money laundering business, but like in The Godfather Part 3, just when he thought he was out, they drag him back in. So Jason Bateman is superb in it. His wife, played by Laura Lee, Lindy, is brilliant. She should get every award going. And there's an actress in it who I had never seen before called Julia Garner, who plays a kind of a local hillbilly who is much cleverer than she appears and is slowly starting to take over the business. So where we left it in season three on a major cliffhanger, where a major character ends up being wiped out by the Mexican cartel. And now you realise that Marty, the lead character, just when he thought he was out, he can't escape. So this is where season three ended and season four starts this Friday. And it's definitely one to binge watch. I've seen the trailers for it. It looks brilliant. It's dark, it's moody, it's brilliantly acted. And unfortunately, it's not crack.
Ozark season four, Netflix, January 21st. And it is not funny. I've learned that lesson.
Jason Bateman's in it. Do you think he's going to be?
That's the thing. Yeah, it's Jason Bateman. Yeah. I think like he's got funny bones. But anyway, not in this
he
one.
He has. Yeah, yeah. But this is not Arrested Development. This is my. And it's funny, you know, because he's such a great actor, and you see him in nothing but comedies. He rarely does drama, but my God, has he got drama chops? He's really, really good in this.
We're going back to the 90s now and to the big screen, because Scream is returning to our screens. Let's take a listen to this.
It's happening. Three attacks so far. Do you have a gun?
I'm Sydney Prescott. Of course I have a gun.
Something about this one just feels different.
Samantha, I know who you are. I've been through this. This is your life now, which means that whoever this is going to keep coming for you. Whatever his link is to our past, it's pulled us all back here. And I won't sleep until he's in the ground.
So, Aoife, back to the well of Scream.
Yeah, and you might think that this film is called Scream, the same name as the very first Scream film, so you might think it's a reboot or something like that, but this isn't. It's the fifth, basically, in the franchise, the Scream franchises. And, you know, anybody who goes back to 1996 will remember Ghostface as the killer there. It's a really kind of funny meta look at horror. So what it does is it takes all these horror tropes and these ideas around horror films, and then it tells you about them while giving you a horror film. It even gets to the point where there is a horror film about what happened in Scream, in the film Scream. So it's very, very meta. They've come back with the main cast who were around in the last films. So we've got Courtney Cox, Neve Campbell, David Arquette. But this time it's a little bit different, because in 1996 and in the other films as well, there was more of a reliance on the landline. And now there's nothing that terrifies a teenager now more than the landline. So that itself could make, you know, a horror movie. But what they've done here is they brought in the idea of mobile phones and other technology, you know, while Ghostface makes his way around Westboro, the town of California. He returns back to target Sydney Prescott and target the people who are connected to her. So, I mean, it's getting good reviews. I mean, I've been going through all the other Scream films over the last couple of weeks, gearing up for this and reminding myself what they're like. And they're, you know, really a bit of crack. They're not totally heavy or anything like that. They give you all the kind of joyful bits of good kind of 90s movie watching, as well as, you know, the horror that you want to expect too, but they're not too over the top.
The other thing I want to ask you about is The Gilded Age. And I saw a bit of coverage and promotional stuff about this over the weekend. It's written by the person, Julian Fellowes, who created Downton Abbey. Is it any good? Is it expected to be good?
This is expect to be good, because Julian Fellowes really knows how to do a series about kind of social strata and people who are vying against each other. It's set in New York, like you're saying, during the Gilded Age, the late 1800s. This is just after like the light bulb and the telephone were invented. It's a really interesting period of American history.
Boom time as well.
Boom time. Yeah. So basically you have all these old money people versus the new money people. So people may be involved in like the railways and things like that. It's got such a great cast in it. So you've got Louisa Jacobson, who I think is Meryl Streep's daughter in it. You also have Cynthia Nixon, who stars here, and Christine Baranski. You know she's going to carry the series. series, yeah. but she's so good. She's so strong.
Perfect.
She
for
plays
her.
Agnes Van Ryn. So there's a lot riding on this because obviously Downton Abbey's hugely successful. I mean, it was one of the best watched ITV series. The films did really well. There's another film coming out there soon. But transferring all of what Fellows does to America and that particular period of history that maybe we don't know a huge amount about here is going to be very interesting, I think.
That's the 25th of January on Now TV.
Exactly.
And a new movie, and this is highly recommended by you, Brian, on Apple TV, Coda.
Oh yeah, this is brilliant. If you want a really feel-good film, you've got to watch this. So it's called CODA, C-O-D-A, which stands for Child of Deaf Adults. And I have to say, it's one of the best films. I know the year's only started, but including last year, one of the best films I've seen in the last 2 years. It's about a young girl whose family are all entirely deaf. She's the only one who can hear. They work on a kind of a fishing boat in Gloucester in Massachusetts. And she works with them to help them with the fishing boat. But she wants to be a singer. Now, she's played by the English actress Emilia Jones, and she's fantastic, and she wants to be a singer, and she's got a fantastic voice, and it's the one thing that she can do that her family can't appreciate because they're all deaf. So they want her to stay with them and help with the family business. She wants to go on to college to become a famous singer. So it's a kind of a family drama about whether they let her go to follow her dreams. It's very feel good. It's, you know, a big warm hug of a movie. It's brilliantly acted. All the roles of the deaf characters are played by deaf actors, including the great Marley Matlin. Yeah. And it's a really heartwarming, beautiful film.
Okay, that's Coda on Apple TV. Aoife and Brian, thank you both very much indeed. We'll take a quick break before news.